So last week we started this study in Satan, which I do not like in the sense of, it's one of those subjects you have to kind of look at once in a while. This will be my first time where I've dove into this subject. This is classic angelology. That is, if you're taking systematic theology, it is a subset of angelology and then down into demonology. So you have theology proper, which is the study of God based upon his word. And then you have that which he created, creatures that he created, which would be angels, angelic beings. And then under that would be demonology. And one specific person in that is Satan. Okay? So that's kind of the category we've been going through. It's almost a Bible school study in that sense. It's a little more, this week we'll have more pictures. So that'll be good. You ever go through a book and then it's like, man, this is a lot of words, but man, it would be good to see pictures. I know when there's a description in the Old Testament in Exodus and Leviticus and how they do the ceremonies within the temple of the tabernacle, or the descriptions of the actual dimensions and what's being used. I love when somebody has an artist rendering of it. Or when the layout of the land, of which tribe goes where in the land. I like to see those maps, those illustrations. So today we're going to look at some of that. But why we bring this up is because Paul brings it up. Paul brings up this in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 18, but we're going to look at verse 17 first. And this is what we covered last week. But we, brethren, having been taken away from you for a short time in presence, not in heart, endeavored more eagerly to see your face with great desire. Therefore, we wanted to come to you, even I, Paul, time and again, but Satan hindered us. And this is always a question when I read this, is how could Satan hinder the great apostle Paul and his team? But evidently there was something. And as we read in Job, we see that God allows Satan with conditions some leeway to do what he does, but usually with a leash. He has a leash on him. And we'll go into that a lot more detail in the next couple weeks about that kind of aspect of Satan's dealings and those kinds of things. And then our response, we're going to deal with how we should respond in that realm, in the spiritual realm. But Satan hindered us, and this is why we launch off this. Now, last week we looked at this. I'm going to briefly go over this, but Sun Tzu in The Art of War talks about this. He said, if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer defeat. And if you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle. Now, he had some hint or historical perspective in the physical realm of where he's at. He's not coming from a biblical concept here. He's coming from, this is kind of how things work in reality. That's how he sees things. He's not coming, thus saith the Lord. But I look at this because everybody in the human level can see this kind of principle. See these principles that he found, and almost every military academy on the planet uses his book in at least one of the classes in military strategies. So it's very interesting what he discovered. So although Sun Tzu learned these things, it does not mean that we as Christians use that as our battle manual. We use the Bible. We look to Jesus Christ. And that's why some of the songs we sing today, we need to be at the feet of Jesus. When we even study this, even look in this subject about the enemy, Satan, we want to stay close to the Master, and we want to stay close to our Father, as close as we can, because the enemy is a trickster, and we saw what happened with Adam and Eve, and here we are, right? So we must rely upon the Lord and stick close to Him. We are sheep, and we need to stay close to our Shepherd as we study this. So knowledge is a key, not the only key, but is one of the keys to victory over the enemy. And so what we look at here in 2 Corinthians 2:11, Paul even explains this. He says, I have done this, that is what he talked about in 2 Corinthians 2, I have done this so that we may not be taken advantage of by Satan. So there's enough in Scripture to help us so that we won't be taken advantage of by him. For we are not ignorant of his schemes. And schemes is devices, tactics, strategies, and behaviors. Okay? And I went into this a lot more detail last week, so you can download last week's sermon and look through it and find this deeper. So we should not be ignorant of Satan's schemes, not ignorant of his strategies, the way he is, what he is, who he is, and his power to deceive. That's what Paul is telling us. We should not be ignorant of his devices. But we also can't be ignorant of what he is and who he is. I am human, but my name is Andy. So I just told you what I am and who I am. God, Yahweh God, God of the Bible, he is Elohim. That is, he is God. That's the substance of who he is, Elohim. But he is Yahweh, covenant, name. So that's his name. That's the who he is, you see. So the what he is creator God, uncreated being, the everlasting God of creation. But who he is Yahweh God. Does that make sense? So same thing. So with Satan is what he is. He's a fallen angelic being. He's spiritual. And who he is, Satan, the devil, serpent. See? And then we see this admonition or this encouragement from Paul in Ephesians 5. It's actually 6, I'm sorry. Ephesians 6, 1 through 10 through 13. Sorry about that. Can't believe I put that way. Sorry about that. Ephesians 6, 10 through 13. Finally, be strengthened in the Lord, and by his vast strength, put on the full armor of God so that you may stand against the tactics of the devil. Notice it's, again, tactics of the devil. So he talked about schemes that we shouldn't be ignorant of, and talked about tactics and how we stand against it. For our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the world powers of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavens. And that word for heavens is heavenlies. It's like it's not the heavens above the heavens where God's throne is, but it's a spiritual realm in between. It's a very interesting word. So it's heavenlies. This is why you must take up the full armor of God so that you may be able to resist in the evil day. And having prepared, again, you have to prepare. And that's how Sun Tzu talked about. Sun Tzu said, you got to know the enemy. And you got to know yourself. You need to be prepared for battle. And for us as Christians, you need to be prepared in the sense of deep intimacy with God based upon his word alone and knowing his word alone so that you may be able to resist in the evil day, having prepared everything to take your stand. So we must fear the Lord. That is, if I fear the Lord, I will not fear anything else. If I fear the Lord, I will not fear anything else. So remember I said knowledge is the key? Two different kinds of knowledge here. One is knowing God personally, experientially. That's that friendship, relationship, fellowship kind of knowledge. I know him. See what I mean? I know him and I am known by him. Okay? Then when it comes to Satan or anything else, it's knowing about technical knowledge. Like I know about my car engine. I get the reference manual out and I work on it or I have somebody else do it. Now I can't even get in there. It's like I open up the hood and it's like, what is that? You know? I need some vast technical knowledge to get in there with all the computers and everything. But what I'm saying is, you see the difference in the knowledge there? And so we need to fear the Lord. That is full surrender. All of our fears laid at his feet. We respect him. And that's the beginning of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's skillful knowledge. How to use what we know. And the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Really understand. And it's God's perspective of wisdom. God's perspective of knowledge and God's perspective of understanding, getting his understanding, getting his perspective, his wisdom, not just wisdom of the world or just wisdom. It's his wisdom. Fear of the Lord is instruction of wisdom, and before honor is humility, and mercy and truth, atonement is provided for iniquity, and by the fear of the Lord one departs from evil. We need to be saved. That's what this one says. I need to have the atoning sacrifice in my life. And I need to have that covenant relationship with God so I have a relationship with him and then I will depart from evil. I have to have this kind of relationship with God. I must have that. If I delve into this kind of study. Because we're going into looking at evil. And so we need to be able to be prepared and have that guard, have God's arms around us, so to speak, to hold us. We need to understand this so in the day of battle, we'll know how to battle him. And we won't be tricked by him. We'll have wise discernment, God's discernment. Okay? So here's what we learned from last week, and these are points. And again, I say, go back, you know, download what you missed last week, if you missed it, and go over what we went over last week. So here are some of the points. The serpent in Genesis 3 is Satan, the devil, not a demon-possessed snake, based upon Revelation 12:9, Revelation 20, verse 1 through 3, 2 Corinthians 11:3, and 13 and 15. It was well known that the serpent was symbolic. It was a symbolic name. Nahash is the actual Hebrew name. And then there's a neighboring kind of nuance of that is Nahash, which is omen, diviner, mutterer, one who reads omens, that kind of thing, kind of witchcraft, that kind of thing. And so we see that that was a play on words because he was a whisperer. He was clever, and the way he did that with Eve, really, and then Adam. So the serpent was a symbolic term, just like he's called a dragon, right? And just like Herod is called a fox by Jesus. Herod is not a fox. Just like Jesus is called a lamb, but Jesus is not really a lamb. Jesus is called the lion of the tribe of Judah. He's not a lion. Those are symbolic usages to characterize the character of the person, to expose the character. And so it was here, it was very demeaning by God to describe him as this. It was very much a put down. Now, this is a recalling of an incident using symbolic language. At the time, I'm not sure he said, "You're a serpent." You understand? But this is a recalling of this. So it characterizes us after the fact to look back at to see how God showed him the story of this event. This is symbolic, and it was real, and it happened. Then we learn Satan is an angelic being. He's a created being, a spiritual being. Okay? So he's in the category of angelic beings. Angels were created before Genesis 1:1. And why I say this is because everything that is enumerated as living creatures in Genesis chapter 1 and 2, reproduce after their kind. Everything reproduces after their kind. Angels do not reproduce, therefore they are individually created. They are not a race of angels. Okay? So that's why they're called sons of God when they meet with Satan in Job 1 and Job 2, when it references it. Satan's amongst the sons of God because they were individually created. Individually created as creations of God. Whereas Adam is called the Son of God, and then his descendants are called that they are created in his image, that is, in Adam's image, because we are all descendants of Adam. We are created in Adam's image, and Adam is created in the image of God. So therefore, the whole race is created in the image and likeness of God, imputed and descended. Whereas you don't see that with angels. They don't have descendants. You see what I'm saying? At least, yeah, Genesis 6 is tricky. Yeah. But again, something else was going on there that was very demonic and evil. And so we're not privy to that, and I'm glad God did not tell us what the mechanics of that situation were. But it was so bad, it horribly destroyed the human race so that God had to destroy them. They were infected by whatever that was. But we're not really going into that right there this week. So there's no indication that angelic beings were created in the image or likeness of God as Adam and Eve were. Although they're intelligent, sentient beings, they're not like us fully in every aspect, in that sense. That makes sense? So they're spiritual. That means they are outside of our physicality. That is, they are above our physicality. Their home is in that heavenlies realm, that spiritual realm. That's where they're created. They had an origination. There was some time that they were created in the past. We know they were either they were created before Genesis 1:1 because of Job 38. It says, when God was laying the foundations of the earth, when he was molding and creating the earth, and that relates to Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's the first verse. So he created the heavens, the Shamayim, and the earth, Eretz. So he's got that, the planets. You have matter, time, because it says beginning, and you have space, which is Shamayim. That is the expanse of something. It's empty, and the only thing in it is the earth at that time, not stars. There aren't stars there yet. Stars don't come until the day four. Okay? So it's not like evolution. Evolution has it reversed. Stars and all that come, and then the earth. In this case, God created the Shamayim, which is empty space, and then you have the Eretz. So you have everything you need to create a physical universe. You have matter, time, and energy. Because he says, let there be light. That's the next thing, right? He didn't say, let's create the earth again. See? So, angelic beings are there singing and praising God while he's doing this in Job 38. Says they were singing to God. So that meant they had to be there while he was creating this prior to the creation. They were already there. So, but they also had a beginning, all right? So they're intelligent, sentient beings, but they're not created in the image of God. So that lays this foundation. It has some relationship, Satan has some relationship to the sons of God. Genesis 6, Job 1 and 2. They fell, and Satan is their leader because he's always amongst them. Those sons of God. Now, that doesn't mean all the sons of God fell, but it means some of them did. If you read Jude and 2 Peter 2, you'll find out about these angels who left their estate. And now they sinned against God, and now they're bound in chains in the abyss. Okay? So that's what he's talking about there. Okay? So we know that the angels fell before Genesis 3 because Satan shows up already fallen. And he's ready to deceive, right? So he's already rebellious. And we know this because when God creates anything, it's always holy, perfect, innocent at the beginning. We always know. God doesn't create evil. Okay? So there had to be a point sometime before Genesis 1:1 or before Genesis 3 or somewhere in there where they fell. That is Satan and his angels. So this gives you a background of what we talked about last week. Here are some popular pictures of Satan today. And if you go look around, you know, Halloween when it comes along and they have the devil suit, kind of looks like this creature with the tail and the pitchfork and the horns and all that. I'm not sure if he looks like that, but everything I see, he isn't like that. It is, he is pictured as a dragon in the book of Revelation, it's true. In the garden, a serpent, because that's derogatory terms, picturing him. But what does he really look like? I'm not sure. Another popular thing is Jesus and Satan arm wrestling, as if Jesus is on par with Satan and Satan's on par with Jesus. No. Our Creator created Satan. There's no way they're on par. They're not even close. It's not like that. But these are the popular themes, even some mythology kind of stuff that's within the church. That's crazy, huh? So, he's really more like this. More like this. This is how the Bible shows him. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into angel light. So he's probably the most beautiful creature that we would have ever seen, and we couldn't keep our eyes on him. And that's the creature that Adam and Eve talked with. One who looked like God. One who is amongst God, who would be in the council of God. That's the Nechash, the deceiver. But he's probably the most beautiful thing we've ever seen. That's why we need to stay close to God. Because he can attract us away from our love. Doesn't mean it's always. And he can also hinder. So, angels, holy or fallen, they have certain abilities and realities of who they are. That is this. When the angels that fell and Satan fell, they didn't lose certain abilities. They did not stop being angelic beings, powerful angelic beings. And they can do certain things that humans cannot. Okay? They do not have to obey the physical laws of reality here that we do. You know, going past the speed of light or whatever. We can't do that. We explode, but they won't. Okay? And they come in all kinds of ranks and categories and sizes and shapes. They come in at least three different brands. Seraphim, cherubim, and sons of God that we know of. These are things that are told to us. And they have various ranks. You know, they have principalities and powers. You know, those kinds of things. So they have ranks. And so let's look at Ezekiel chapter 1 as it explains this. And I will ask you all to write down Ezekiel 10 as well. Ezekiel 10 deciphers what these living creatures are. So if you don't know what the name of them are, what their name is, you can just go to Ezekiel 10, and there's a replaying of this, but the word cherubim is used. Okay? So just like we look in the book of Revelation where I don't know what this chapter and this certain item is in this chapter. I might have to go a couple more chapters. And then it answers my question of what this was. And then I can go back and say, oh, that's what this is. We see this where the Bible interprets Bible and gives us the answers to our questions. Okay, so let's listen to Ezekiel chapter 1.
The book of Ezekiel. Now it came to pass in the 30th year, in the 4th month, on the 5th day of the month, as I was among the captives by the river of Chebar, that the heavens were open, and I saw visions of God. On the 5th day of the month, it was in the 5th year of King Jehoiakim's captivity. The word of the Lord came expressly to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Chebar, and the hand of the Lord was upon him there. Then I looked, and behold, a whirlwind was coming out of the north, a great cloud with raging fire engulfing itself, and brightness was all around it, and radiating out of its midst, like the color of amber, out of the midst of the fire. Also from within came the likeness of four living creatures. This was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man. Each one had four faces. Each one had four wings. Their legs were straight, and the soles of their feet were like the soles of calves' feet. They sparkled like the color of burnished bronze. The hands of a man were under their wings on their four sides, and each of the four had faces and wings. Their wings touched one another. The creatures did not turn when they went, but each one went straight forward. As for the likeness of their faces, each had the face of a man. Each of the four had the face of a lion on the right side. Each of the four had the face of an ox on the left side. And each of the four had the face of an eagle. Thus were their faces. Their wings stretched upward. Two wings of each one touched one another, and two covered their bodies. And each one went straight forward. They went wherever the spirit wanted to go, and they did not turn when they went. As for the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire, like the appearance of torches going back and forth among the living creatures. The fire was bright, and out of the fire went lightning, and the living creatures ran back and forth, in appearance like a flash of lightning. Now as I looked at the living creatures, behold, a wheel was on the earth beside each living creature with its four faces. The appearance of the wheels and their workings was like the color of beryl, and all four had the same likeness. The appearance of their workings was, as it were, a wheel in the middle of a wheel. When they moved, they went toward any one of four directions. They did not turn aside when they went. As for their rims, they were so high they were awesome, and their rims were full of eyes all around the four of them. When the living creatures went, the wheels went beside them. When the living creatures were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up. Wherever the spirit wanted to go, they went, because there the spirit went. And the wheels were lifted together with them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. When those went, these went. When those stood, these stood. And when those were lifted up from the earth, the wheels were lifted up together with them, for the spirit of the living creatures was in the wheels. The likeness of the firmament above the heads of the living creatures was like the color of an awesome crystal stretched out over their heads. And under the firmament, the wings spread out straight one toward another. Each one had two which covered one side, each one had two which covered the other side of the body. When they went, I heard the noise of their wings like the noise of many waters, like the voice of the Almighty, a tumult like the noise of an army. When they stood still, they let down their wings. A voice came from above the firmament that was over their heads. Whenever they stood, they let down their wings. And above the firmament over their heads was the likeness of a throne, an appearance like a sapphire stone. On the likeness of the throne was a likeness from the appearance of a man, high above. Also from the appearance of his waist and upward, I saw, as it were, the color of amber, with the appearance of fire all around the head. From the appearance of his waist and downward, I saw, as it were, the appearance of fire with brightness all around. Like the appearance of a rainbow in a cloud on a rainy day, so was the appearance of the brightness all around. This was the appearance of a likeness of the glory of the Lord. So when I saw it, I fell on my face, and I heard a voice of one speaking.
Amazing, huh? So this is an artist's rendering, various artist renderings of what he saw. And so the other day we were watching, or actually yesterday, we were watching the Weather Channel, and they talk about weather, different kinds of strange weather. And one of them was a fire tornado. There was this raging fire up in Alaska for about 3 months, they said. And one time the C-130 was coming along and looking at it, and this fire tornado was 3/4 of a mile wide. And it was just like a tornado, whirling around, full of fire all the way up. And it was ripping up trees just like a regular tornado would, because it had its own climate. And so much of the pole was going up and the twirling of it, that it was just ripping things apart. He said it was just like watching a tornado out in the plains, but it was fire. It was all full of fire. So that kind of gives you a picture of something, of what Ezekiel is seeing, as this appears out of nowhere. And we always see this, where when God comes out of, or an angel comes out of the spiritual realm, it's like doors of heaven open up, and it's like they come through this portal or something out of another dimension. They're not coming in to the physical dimension from physical to physical. They're coming from the spiritual realm to the physical realm. And so it's like if they were 10-dimensional creatures coming into 3 dimensions. It'd be like if we lived in 2 dimensions and someone in 3 dimensions, we couldn't fathom that. We could only understand 2 dimensions, length and width, let's say, not height. And so it is, when that happens and God comes through with his glory, that's what he was seeing. And so here are some artist renderings of the man who is up there, very similar to what we see in the book of Revelation, where Jesus is depicted in chapter 1, very similar to this one who is upon the throne. And you know it's the Lord. It says, thus is the likeness of the appearance of the glory of the Lord. So it was, he was seeing a vision. It was the likeness of the appearance. That is, he couldn't really see the reality. If he got to see the full reality, probably he'd vaporize. But he got to see some of it. And the wheels within a wheel. Now, some people think they're UFO-looking kind of things. It might be. It might be what UFOs are today. But remember, those are fallen angels. That's why I'm saying they didn't lose their abilities to be able to do things like this. It said the spirit of the creatures was in the wheels. That means those wheels were like a manifestation of those living creatures. Amazing, huh? Look like metal or beryl, which is kind of a crystalline structure, but it's beautiful, shiny, with eyes all around. Maybe it looked like rivets, some people say, but I think it's eyes. And again, this is a vision. But what he's seeing is something profound. He is seeing something that is amazing. Here's another few artist renderings of these wheels and the creatures in them, beside them. And notice they have the four faces. If you look at this and compare with Revelation 4, where you see the four living creatures before the throne, there they only have one face each, but it's one of the four. That is, there's one of a man, of an eagle, of an oxen, and then and a lion. Okay. And so that one only has one face in that vision in Revelation 4, but it's the same creatures, because it says four living creatures. and they're around the throne of God. Okay? So these are one type of creature that is around, angelic being that is around the throne of God, but they're associated with the movement of things. That's what wheels represent, the movement and activity. Okay? In Genesis 3, what was guarding the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Cherubim with the sword, remember? So when you read that, cherubim had been around for a long time. So you have holy angels, but what about those that fell? You see? So that's why I bring this up. All kinds of shapes and sizes. Here's a really old painting, artist rendering of one of those. We have the four living creatures with the four faces, the wheels, and the glory of the Lord. And here's another one. Beautiful. They have wings, but the wings go down when they're sitting or standing. And when they meet with people, you wouldn't even know they had wings. But all of a sudden, they unfurl their wings. It's amazing. These creatures are amazing. Now, don't get lost in the angels, angelic beings, because what matters is the glory of the Lord. Okay? Problem is, these creatures, some of them fell. Some of them fell. Now, why the four faces? How the camp of Israel was put together. You had the four heads of the four directions of the 12 tribes. You have Judah, which is represented by a lion. You have Reuben, which is represented in their heraldry flag, yes, with a man. And Ephraim, the ox, and Dan, the eagle. That's the story. So it's interesting how it's tied to Israel. And how Israel is tied to those living creatures, and how the holiness of God is reflected here. Every one of the 12 tribes have their own heraldry. If you look at some of the European flags and heraldry, you'll see all these, every one of the tribes in those heraldry. It's interesting. Yep, hide them, hide the lost tribes, right out in open sight. That's how God does stuff. So we're going to look at how these creatures, they change shapes. Now look, they look like wheels. They also look like humans, eagles, oxen, lions. So they can look like that. If you look at Egyptian walls and they have the hieroglyphs, do you not see these man-like creatures, but they have different faces and heads, right? But these are the gods that they worship. No, these are fallen angelic beings that wanted to be worshipped. And they can manifest themselves like this. What was the creature that they sacrificed to? The golden what? Calf. The golden cow. Oh, wait a minute. You see, all of that is in the heritage. That's why we're not to sacrifice and worship the host of heaven. We're not to worship all the angelic beings. We're only supposed to worship Yahweh God. And so we see that these fallen creatures come in all shapes and sizes. So let's look at seraphim. In the year the king Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting above his throne, high and lifted up. Again, the Lord is on his throne, high and lifted up, and now he's surrounded by these angelic beings. And the train of his robe filled the temple. Above it stood seraphim. Each one had six wings. Now we weren't privy of how many wings the cherubim had, but we know they have wings, so they at least have two. But in the seraphim, they have six wings, three on each side. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one cried to another. So we know there's more than one. And in most traditions of this, there's four, just like there were the cherubim. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, or Yahweh Tzabaoth. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door were shaken by the voice of him who cried out. And the house was filled with smoke. So I said, woe is me, for I'm undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of people of unclean lips. Boy, how about today? Just think if that was today. And I dwell in the midst of unclean lips, people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts, Yahweh Tzabaoth. Then one of the seraphim flew to me. So they can fly. Just like the cherubim can fly. It's very interesting. Having in his hand a live coal which he had taken from his tongs from the altar, and he touched my mouth with it and said, Behold, this has touched your lips, your iniquity is taken away, and your sin purged. So angelic beings involved, as we saw in the book of Revelation, with prayer, with coals, and you'll see in Ezekiel 10, as you do your study, you'll see coals of fire from the altar. And so they have something to do with redemption. They also have something to do with judgment. They are an extension and servants of God. In Hebrews chapter 1, it says they are like flames of fire, servants of the Lord, messengers. Flames of fire, they're energy beings or something like that, but they're energetic. So we see this kind of renderings here. Six wings around the throne, and then we see the live coal being given to Isaiah. So these are different kinds of creatures, and they look differently, and they have different uses. That is, they have different ranks in what they do and job descriptions. So they come in various categories, so all kinds of shapes and sizes. Isaiah 6 gives us a hint, because the word seraph or seraphim has the same roots as nahash, copper, bronze, fire, flying serpents, that kind of thing. They are used for that. So nahash, the serpent in the Garden of Eden, and seraphim, which we just saw, are of the same roots in Hebrew. That is, they are categorized in the same way. So that's why many scholars think that the category of who Satan is a seraphim, just like Gabriel and Michael would be. And we'll talk about that later. Another one is a very huge angel that we see in Revelation 10. He is so large and huge that his head goes up into the clouds, and he can put his foot on the land, it says, and his other foot on the sea. Now, we were at the beach yesterday, and there's really no way that I could, like, put my foot in the ocean and my foot on the land at the same time, where I'm not really, you know, I'm still kind of on the land. You'd have to be really huge. Well, that's what the depiction is of this angelic being. That means he could be normal size, and then because of who he is and what he is, he can be huge. They can change their shapes and sizes. That's what I'm trying to get at, is that these angelic beings are not like us in that sense. They are created to be the servants of God. They are created holy, but a group of them rebel. And so we come to Daniel 10, where it talks about where Daniel is praying for 21 days. And finally, Gabriel comes to him and said, I have come to you in answer to your prayers, but I have been fighting the prince of Persia for 21 days. Now, this is an angelic being. Fighting the prince of Persia? That is Artaxerxes? Would he be fighting this guy? No, no. We get a hint. It's like pulling the veil away. And we get to see behind the scenes where this angelic being, Gabriel, explains this to Daniel about Gabriel and his angels were fighting against the prince of Persia, that is this demonic prince that's under Satan, and his angels, and they're fighting, and they're really not making any headway for 21 days until Gabriel calls in backup and says, Michael, come on over and help me. So Michael and his angels come, and Michael and Gabriel, with their forces, defeat the prince of Persia. Now, this prince of Persia, some would say, is Satan himself. Others would say it's a lieutenant or general under Satan. Who knows? Whatever, you have two-thirds of the angels against one-third of the angels. Those are good odds. You see? Well, that what I want to get at is there's at least three divisions of angels explained in the Bible. Gabriel has his. He's an archangel. And Michael is an archangel. And then that means Satan was an archangel because one-third fell with him. So you have two-thirds still with God. Now this is a surmising, that is, and there's nothing in Thus Saith the Lord. We have to look over Scripture, just like we do with the Trinity. We bring up a doctrine from the Trinity, we bring this up, and understanding that God has his commanders, Gabriel and Michael, and those are the two main angels explained to us, and then they are over two-thirds of the angels, the holy angels, that did not fall. Now we see in the book of Revelation chapter 12, it says Michael and his angels. So Michael is now working with Gabriel and have all their angels, all the angels are fighting against Satan and his angels. But we know that's what it means. So when Satan is bound, it's not just Satan bound, it's Satan and his angels are bound and thrown in the pit in Revelation 20. Does this make sense? So it's just like when Solomon built the temple. Well, he didn't really build the temple. It was his crew that built the temple. But he's the titular head. That is, the one you look at and say, oh yeah, that's the guy. General Patton. You don't say General Patton won this certain battle. General Patton and his guys, his troops, his platoons, all those folks under him, working under him in the same way. So we see this. Also, every time Daniel sees these creatures, he calls them, I see a man. So they also appear as men, but it says he is made to fly swiftly. Just like Isaiah said, and just like what Ezekiel showed, that when they flew, what happened? They unfurl their wings and they fly, but when they are standing, you can't see the wings. And so it's interesting, they also look like humans. So we see all these different shapes and sizes, and what this means is the enemy has not lost that. That is, those who are fallen angels have not lost those abilities, even though they're fallen. Now, I will say there's a difference. One thing, and this is not on your notes, this is free for today. In the Passover situations that are shown, those scenes in the Gospels, it says Satan entered the heart of Judas. We do not see any holy angels entering into people or pigs or anything. But we do see that with those who have fallen. It's like there's some ability that they've lost, that is to manifest themselves into the physical reality. Does that make sense? They have to go through people, fallen people. Whereas angelic beings can appear, that is, holy angelic beings can appear, and they don't need to possess people. Okay? Now, we do see that even today when ancient aliens appear to people or whatever, they can walk through walls, that kind of thing. And so those would be demons. They're not angels because they're trying to lead a person away from God. And especially when a person who cries out to Jesus and they have to flee, that tells you what they really are. They're demons. And so what I'm saying is there's something about some of the ability that they have. Because really what they want to do is come and possess you. They want to get inside you. I don't know why that is with the evil side of things. Whereas the holy angels have no need. You never see them doing that. So it's just a little difference, a little nuance of their... They lost some kind of ability, but there's a lot of the ability they did not lose. And their power and their tricksterness, that is, their evil deceptions. So here's what we need to look at. We need to be sober. We need to be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Now, when Peter was writing this, Peter was writing this to Christians. Resist him, steadfast in your faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. So there's something about us being vigilant, prayerful, and discerning that we have to be, because it's a command. Why would Peter even bring this up? Or James? James says, therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. I mean, there are solutions here, but why? Because they don't give up. We might give up, but they don't. And they can come in all different shapes and sizes, which means every single angle. That's why we need to be in prayer for each other. The enemy seeks to deceive us, and for Christians to inoculate us, to make us useless, to make us no impact in society with the gospel. That is, to make us so that we don't hurt his kingdom. He wants to cause us to be so distracted and get caught up in this world's way of thinking and everything so that we just flow along and get along. Like a dead fish going down a river. That's okay. He likes that. But we don't care about that, right? We want to make sure that we stay vigilant and sober, for our adversary the devil seeks to devour us. Amen? So that's why our God is a mighty warrior. Although he might hinder us temporarily, we ultimately have the victory over him. And God can even use that hindrance that Satan does to cause us to be more holy and sanctified. Amen? So regardless, we still win. He is a defeated enemy. Amen? Always remember that. So let's sing this last song and praise the Lord together.